Now, I've got my countdown clock here. It says 24 days until early voting begins, so we're in game mode.
Hello, and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk. There are just over 50 days until Election Day, and as we've discussed repeatedly on this podcast, this is not going to be a normal election. Many states will be handling far more mail ballots than they're used to, polling places are being modified for coronavirus safety reasons, and the president has baselessly challenged the legitimacy of the election for months. And that isn't even to mention the threat of foreign interference, which American intelligence officials have repeatedly warned of. I wanted to get a better sense of how states are preparing for this abnormal election, so I've invited the Secretary of State of Ohio, Frank LaRose, on the podcast. LaRose is a Republican and is overseeing the election in a state where all voters are eligible to vote by mail without an excuse. Secretary LaRose, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Galen.
So, out of the gates, how prepared are you for this fall's election in Ohio right now?
Our number one priority is making sure that even though, as you said, it's going to be an unusual election, we want to make sure that for Ohio's voters, it's the closest thing to the normal experience that they can have. In Ohio, for close to 20 years, we've had 4 weeks of absentee voting, which Ohioans, both Republican and Democrat, trust, where you can vote from the comfort of home. We've had 4 weeks for a long time. We've had 4 weeks of early voting where you can go to the Board of Elections if you like that in-person voting experience and you can cast your ballot in person, including evening and weekend hours, over 200 hours of early voting available in Ohio. And of course, if you're a traditionalist and you want to come to the polls on November 3rd, we're going to open them up at 6:30 a.m. and close them at 7:30 p.m. You'll be greeted by a neighbor. They'll be smiling, but you won't see it because they'll be wearing a mask. And the machines will be spread 6 feet apart, and we're going to be sanitizing everything between each voter. But really, other than that, this election experience is going to be a lot like what Ohioans are accustomed to.
Apart from the modifications you're making for coronavirus for in-person voting, is there anything you're doing differently this year because of coronavirus?
Well, a lot of things. I mean, first of all, we're telling our boards of elections to be prepared for the highest volume of early voting and the highest volume of absentee voting that they've ever seen. We took the millions of dollars of CARES Act funding that came in our door and pushed it right out to the county boards of elections, because I've always had the belief that you need to surge resources to where the action is. And in this case, that's at the county boards of elections. And they're using those dollars to do things like something as simple as bringing on extra part-time staff to handle the volume of absentee mail that they're receiving, or even something as simple as buying that $1,000 machine that cuts open envelopes is a big process improvement for a small county that maybe used to do that by hand. And it's a good thing. We reported earlier this week that over 1 million Ohioans have already requested their absentee ballots. And so those are some of the things that we're doing as it relates to making sure that we're ready for that high volume of vote by mail that we're going to see in Ohio. We're also making sure that we're recruiting poll workers. Probably the thing that I've focused on more than anything else over the last couple of weeks is recruiting poll workers and making sure that we're going to have those poll workers that we need, because we need close to 55,000 poll workers in the state of Ohio in order to open those polls at 6:30 a.m. on election day. We've got five really innovative plans that we're using with the county boards of elections. But the thing is, we're seeing Ohioans step up and answer the call to duty. And then when they do sign up to be poll workers, they'll know that they're going to be working at a safe and healthy polling location. We've instituted a 48-point checklist that we devised with CDC and with the Ohio Department of Health that the boards of elections are required to follow to make sure they're creating that healthy environment. And nothing that anybody wouldn't expect. We're taking a cue from what the grocery stores have been doing and the restaurants have been doing, some of those really creative solutions that the private sector has come up with. We're implementing those same type of solutions as it relates to making sure that both voters and poll workers are being kept safe. And by the way, they're going to have the supplies they need as well. Just a couple weeks ago, I was at an Ohio manufacturing company that is manufacturing masks, and they donated close to 500,000 masks. We're buying a lot more. We've got huge quantities of hand sanitizer and disinfecting wipes and everything else. And so it's going to be a safe and healthy environment. Those are some of the things that we're doing to make sure we're ready. But Galen, probably as important as any of that is getting accurate information out to Ohio voters, because as you mentioned, there's a lot of false information making its rounds. Some of it is you know, but some of it's just people repeating things that they think are true and have no ill intent. Others are much more malicious than that, where we have foreign adversaries that are trying to degrade the trust that people have in our elections. And so the best antidote to a lie is the truth, and a lot of it. And so one of my jobs is to be that trusted source of information as Ohio's chief elections officer. And that's why conversations like this are so important.
You said the best antidote to a lie is the truth. At this point, President Trump has said that the only way he'll lose the election is if it's rigged. Is that a lie?
Well, I tell you what, a lie has to have an intentionality behind it. I don't know what's in his heart on that, but I can tell you that elections are decided by who gets the most support. I can tell you that in Ohio, the election's not going to be rigged. I believe that either candidate has a shot at winning or losing based on what the voters choose. That's kind of the almost the faith that we have in democracy. You know, I'm a member of the Republican Party, but in this job, I wear the referee's jersey. So, you know, I'm just making sure that the people of Ohio have the chance to have their voice heard. And again, I can tell you that in Ohio, there will be no rigged election, but both candidates for president and every other office have to earn it. Ohioans don't give away election wins to anybody without a fight. And we want our candidates to come here and earn it in Ohio. And everybody has a fair chance to do that.
More specifically, the president has also disparaged no excuse absentee mail voting like you have in Ohio. And he said baselessly that it would lead to a rigged election. Can you clarify whether voting by mail with no excuse is safe and secure and whether it would lead to a rigged election?
Yeah, in Ohio, the way that we run our absentee voting is trusted by both Republicans and Democrats, has been for, again, close to 20 years. What I've heard the president raising concerns about is that universal vote by mail system, such as what they have in Washington and Oregon. States like California and Hawaii as well do that, I believe. And where in those states, they mail everybody a ballot, whether they ask for one or not. That's not what we have in Ohio. And so one of the things that I have to do is to clarify for people exactly what our system is. Here's how it works in Ohio. It's a two-step process. You have to request a ballot. And when you request a ballot, it's a form that you have to fill out. You have to include your full name and date of birth and the last four of your Social Security number. You have to put your signature on it. That signature has to match the one that's on file. All of those safeguards before you can ever even get the ballot mailed to you. And oh, by the way, we maintain accurate voter rolls in Ohio. I don't apologize to anybody for removing deceased voters from the voter rolls, for example, or those that move out of state. In Ohio, we prohibit ballot harvesting. This process where a party operative can go around and collect up ballots, it's led to problems in places like North Carolina, where actually a member of my party was convicted of voter fraud as a result of a scheme involving ballot harvesting. And in Ohio, you can also track your ballot. And so this is where it's almost a crowdsource method of ballot security, because each voter can go to our website, voteohio.gov, and they can make sure that the board has received their request. And then once the board mails their ballot, they'll know when it's on their way to their house. And then they can know the ballot's actually been mailed back. So all of those safeguards, and by the way, all of that repeats itself when you actually mail the ballot back in. You have to provide the same identifying information, signature, and everything else. The idea that somebody could create a large-scale voter fraud in a system like ours is far-fetched to the point of not being possible.
And I just want to clarify, because I know that you're familiar with other states' voting processes as well. Are you saying that there's a better likelihood that a universal vote-by-mail state might have a rigged election? Or would you say that the president is also wrong there?
You'll never hear me use the word rigged election, because I know the people that run elections in these states, and they're very dedicated people. What I will say, though, is that the opportunities for fraudulent votes rise in states where they send an absentee ballot to everyone, whether they ask for one or not. And so, for example, if you don't do a very meticulous job of maintaining accurate voter rolls, you're going to be mailing ballots out to people that are deceased. And at that point, if somebody wanted to forge a signature or whatever else, obviously that would be a felony. It's a serious matter. Here are the facts, Galen. Voter fraud is exceedingly rare. It's exceedingly rare in Ohio, and it's exceedingly rare throughout the country. The reason it's rare is because we take it seriously. We prosecute for it. It's a felony. It's not a laughing matter. We don't tolerate any level of voting fraud. What works in other states is for them. Here in Ohio, we like the process that we have where there are safeguards on both ends. And we know that when the results are tallied and the final results announced here in Ohio, voters can trust that. And I believe that other states have good methods as well. But again, that's up to them. My focus is what we have here in Ohio.
All right. So I want to talk a little bit about the specific processes in Ohio. The state faced several challenges during its primary election this year. The March 17th election was postponed last minute to allow people to vote by mail. And when the state voted in late April, there were reports of thousands of voters not receiving their ballots in time. And there were also at least hundreds of completed ballots that were not returned to elections offices by the Postal Service in time to be counted. What went wrong?
Well, first of all, when the governor decided to postpone in-person voting on March 17th, that was the decision that he made the day before March 16th. And so this was exactly the same time that every state in the nation was declaring public health emergencies. We were all in this huge transition where we were going to figure out how do we continue conducting important processes like this in the midst of a pandemic. My guidance to the state legislature at the time, and by the way, the bipartisan boards of elections as well, said if you give us 6 weeks, we can have an in-person election in 6 weeks. That'll give us time to put all the safety protocols in place. And in the meantime, people can continue sending in their absentee ballots. And because I believe that there always has to be an in-person voting opportunity. It's part of the way that we do things here in Ohio. It's part of the procedure that should exist. There should never be an election without that in-person opportunity. Now, the state legislature made a different choice. They wanted the election concluded rapidly. They were ready to see it done. And so what they ordered us to do, instead of what the elections officials and myself wanted to do, they said, wrap it up by April 28th, make it an all-postal contest. We told them that wasn't enough time, but when the legislature speaks, we listen, and we carried out the election they asked us to carry out. We carried out an all-postal primary, and it concluded on April 28th. Now, the problems, as you mentioned, resulted from people procrastinating, people waiting to the last minute, not acknowledging the basic logistics of how long it takes for something to be mailed from one place to another. And we also saw problems where the Postal Service wasn't moving as fast as they should be. And by the way, this is a concern that elections officials all over the country have. This is why I got together with a bipartisan group of secretaries of state, and we had a conversation just a few weeks ago with the Postmaster General of the U.S. and demanded, and thankfully they were very responsive, that they do things like, for example, an all-clear procedure at each of their sorting facilities and what they call a hand-to-hand transfer, so that those local elections officials build a personal relationship with their local postmaster and actually hand off that elections mail so that nothing gets lost in the process. Those are the kind of things that we've asked the Postal Service to do. Those are the kind of things that they've said they're going to do, and now we need to hold them accountable. But the other thing is, Ohioans need to know that, yes, mail may take 5 or 6 days instead of 2 or 3 days that you're used to. And so don't delay. Send in your absentee ballot request right now. And then as soon as you get your ballot, return it. Don't leave it sitting on your kitchen table.
When it comes, though, to sending out absentee ballots to Ohioans and some voters not getting their ballots in time, is that on the elections infrastructure in Ohio? Or are you saying that's also on voters?
You know what? Of course, voting is both the right and a responsibility. You have to be a responsible voter. My friends from the League of Women Voters, they talk about having a voting plan. Each of us should just make our plan. And in Ohio, you've got, again, those three great options: early voting, absentee voting, in-person election day voting. If absentee voting is your plan, then don't wait till the last minute to request your absentee ballot. It's a basic responsibility that you have. One of the things that we've been trying to change for a long time, and the Postal Service has pointed it out in the letter that they sent, and I agree with them, is that we have a foolish deadline in state law. We say in state law that you can request your absentee ballot up until noon on Saturday. That was the case back in April as well. State law says Saturday before the election is the deadline to request your absentee ballot. We've been trying to change this forever. It's foolish. It creates false expectations. It encourages one of the worst of human behaviors, which is procrastination, right? We've been telling people that effectively a week before the election, the Tuesday before Election Day, or for this one, October 27th, that's really the drop-dead date to request your ballot. If you request a ballot at noon on Saturday, chances are you're going to receive it on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday after it's too late and the election's over. And so, again, state law says that you can do it, but it doesn't make it a good idea.
Democrats in your state have accused you of making it harder for people to vote by only allowing one ballot drop box per county. Now, more drop boxes would likely remove some of that uncertainty of the post office because more people could easily find one of those drop boxes. Why not provide more of them?
Well, I'm not going to get too deep into this because there are actually two pending lawsuits on this. This is the unfortunate reality here in Ohio when we're running a presidential election. You can see from my countdown clock, only 24 days until early voting begins. And there's a variety of lawsuits. Some of them just may be politically motivated, unfortunately. I'll say this, though. I can only do what the law allows. I serve in an executive capacity as the Ohio Secretary of State. There are plenty of public policies I would like to see implemented. I would like to see us have online absentee ballot requests, for that matter, as well. I've been saying that for 5 years. When I served in the legislature 5 years ago, I proposed that we have online absentee ballot requests. The law doesn't allow it, and so whether I want it or not, I can't do it as an executive office holder. Same thing with these, but there's a court case on this, so we'll see what the judge has to say. But here's the other thing, Galen. The right way to return your absentee ballot, the way that Ohioans have been returning their absentee ballots forever, is by putting it in the mail. You have a drop box at the end of your driveway or on your front porch or a few blocks down from your house where the blue box is bolted to the curb. What I want to see is postage paid absentee ballot return envelopes. I've been asking the legislature for that since April as well, and likewise, they haven't acted on it. They've got one last chance actually coming up in just a few days, where I've got a spending request in front of what's called the State Controlling Board, which is just the body that approves large expenditures by executive office holders like me. And as long as they approve this $3 million expenditure out of my own office budget, our boards of elections will be able to provide first class return postage for every absentee ballot envelope in the state. And what that means is, again, the mailbox at the end of your driveway or on your front porch or the blue box a couple blocks down from your house, That's a secure ballot drop box. That's the best way to have Ohioans. And by the way, remember, we can receive ballots at our boards of elections up to 10 days after the election. So as long as you get it in the mail by Monday, November 2nd, your voice is going to be heard. Your ballot's going to be counted.
You've mentioned that you've asked the state legislature to allow you to spend money on postage so that Ohioans don't have to pay to return their ballots. You also mentioned that you'd like to see an online portal for requesting an absentee ballot. You suggested that maybe if the legislature was open to it, you'd have more drop boxes for ballots. You're the Republican Secretary of State. The legislature is controlled by Republicans. Why isn't the legislature following your lead on this, these measures that would make it easier to vote?
You know, I think legislative bodies have reasons for doing things sometimes that are beyond partisanship. I think that, listen, there are a lot of members of the legislature that have this belief that elections should just remain static and not change. They just want to see things remain as they are. It's kind of a let's just maintain the status quo and not upset the apple cart kind of idea. That's a challenge. Of course, elections, just like every other part of life, has to innovate, change with the time and grow and modernize. But that's, you know, primarily the thing that I run up against is people that say, you know what, elections work pretty good in this state. Let's just not mess with it. You know what? And I agree largely that we have a good framework. The foundation of how we run elections in Ohio, with those three good choices, with the bipartisan local control of our elections, really the way that we run elections globally in Ohio is a good system. There are some minor tweaks that need to be made. And as you mentioned, you know, some of those modernizations I've been calling for, and the fact that the legislature and me are of the same party, that's really not material.
Do you think there is anything to the criticism that some Republicans try to make it harder for people to vote?
No, I don't think so. I think that the come election season, people believe a lot of things that have to do with this kind of tribalism of politics. And unfortunately, in this modern era that we're living in, people have become very tribal about their politics. I was thinking about this as I was driving through my neighborhood the other day, and I saw Biden signs in yards, and I saw Trump signs in yards, and I thought, I hope that this isn't happening, but my guess is that there's a lot of animosity among neighbors right now. It shouldn't be that way. You should be able to have a beer with your neighbor, have a friendly conversation with your neighbor, even if they're supporting a candidate that you don't support. we need to get back to that. But that same kind of tribalism of politics has caused people to invent all of these conspiracy theories where, you know, folks think on the Republican side that all the Democrats want to cheat and steal the election. It's not true. And folks on the Democratic side think all the Republicans want to cheat and steal the election. That's equally not true. We're patriotic Americans that are going to campaign hard for our favorite candidate, and we're going to have a fair election in Ohio and in, you know, 49 other states.
Just to clarify, and I have heard you talk about this before, historically it does seem like some Republicans have suggested that the party is better off when not everyone votes. You've heard those comments, haven't you? What do you make of those comments?
I just wholeheartedly disagree with anybody that would say something so foolish. Here in Ohio, it hasn't played out that way either, right? If you look at 2016 was one of the highest turnouts we've ever had in our state's history. One of the highest turnouts by percent that we've ever had. 2018 was the highest turnout governor's election we've ever had in our state's history, bar none. Those are two elections with humongous voter turnout, and Republicans ran the table in both elections, virtually winning every election in the state at the higher levels. So, I mean, I just reject this notion that when there's a high turnout, it's bad for Republicans. And anybody that says that is probably just, you know, not paying attention to the facts.
I want to get back to some of the specifics of vote by mail. Even once the ballot is returned to the elections office and it's ready to be tallied, there are some complications with voting by mail that voting in person doesn't necessarily bring with it. So in your primary, more than 21,000 votes that were cast didn't count, largely because of problems with signatures or identification. That's 1.2% of the absentee votes. According to a report from the Cincinnati Inquirer, that is up significantly from 2016 and up from the average over the past 4 years. What are you doing to address that?
You're right. That is an issue of voter education. And when you're going to have people voting for the first time, absentee people that have voted as a traditional in-person voter, it's important that we are very clear about those instructions. And so we've worked with a group called the Center for Civic Design to redesign the instruction form, for example, that goes out with the absentee ballot. It's completely redesigned. To redesign the identification envelope that they put their ballot in to make it clear. Common errors are people just don't put a signature on there. Clearly, we can't accept it if it's not signed. Another common error is that people will put today's date instead of their date of birth. And so these are things that we've highlighted and we're making very clear to people. But here's something else that we're able to do, and this is great news. I've directed our boards of elections to call voters if there's a problem. Now, this is more work by the Board of Elections. I acknowledge that. But this is also why it's so important for you to put your phone number and email address on there. We ask for phone number and email address. Those are optional because the law doesn't dictate them, so we added them as optional fields on the form. But if you put your phone number, if you put your email address, and if you made a mistake filling out your ballot, the ballot form or the ID envelope, the Board of Elections is going to call you. And they're going to give you an opportunity to correct that. And oftentimes you can correct it over the phone and make sure that your voice is going to be counted. And here's the other thing, Galen. When Ohioans can track their ballot, if they just take the responsibility to go to voteohio.gov, they can have basically the digital equivalent of that satisfaction of putting it in the ballot box. Some people just like that act of putting it in the box or putting it in the scanner. Well, the digital equivalent of that is going to voteohio.gov and seeing the check mark that your ballot has been received by your Board of Elections and you know that it's going to be counted. And by the way, now that you've been an early voter or an absentee voter and you've cast your ballot, you can sign up to be a poll worker because we need many thousands of Ohioans to take on that important responsibility as well.
The ACLU and some other voting groups are suing you over Ohio's signature verification process. Why are they wrong? Why would you say that your signature verification process is fine?
Yeah. Again, something on pending litigation. I'm not going to go too deep into it, but to say Ohio has used signature verification for a very long time. It's a completely bipartisan process. The County Board of Elections does it as a bipartisan vote of the county board. And it's exceedingly rare that a ballot be rejected based on a signature mismatch. I think in 2016, it was something like 700 in the entire state, which is, of course, a fraction of a percent. And so, the process that the law lays out in Ohio is what I'm going to carry out and what our county boards are going to carry out. And that's worked for a long time.
In a close election, tens of thousands of votes can make the difference. So do you worry about lawsuits and maybe doubts about the result if it's a close election and thousands of ballots are discarded?
The old joke among elections officials is that the elections officials' prayer is, Lord, whoever wins, let them win big, right? But we know that when there are tight elections, that's when the legalities come into play. We'll be ready for that. But this is why transparency is so important. There's nothing to hide at a board of elections. It's an open book. In fact, before the pandemic, I was traveling around the state doing elections 101 training for journalists at board of elections offices. The idea being, come in, let's spend a couple hours. I'm going to show you from beginning to end how the process works. You can sort of kick the tires and see behind the curtain, if you will. There's nothing to hide at a board of elections. Everything that we do is by the books, by the law. Fully transparent and truly bipartisan, right? Again, nothing happens at a board of elections without both Republicans and Democrats overseeing it. So any allegation that there's some sort of conspiracy by one party or the other is just ignorant to the fact that that's not how elections work in Ohio. Even down to the way the building is constructed, Galen, the doors have two locks on them. There's a Republican key and a Democratic key. You can't even get into the room where the machines are stored or get into the room where the ballots are stored unless you have both Republicans and Democrats present. It's like those old submarine movies from the 1980s where it takes two keys to launch the torpedo. That's what it takes to get into the room where the ballots are stored or where the voting machines are stored in Ohio. Ohioans can trust this process.
Let's talk a little bit about the tallying process, which, again, mail voting makes more complicated. Should we expect results from Ohio on election night?
We are going to report the results that we have as of 7:30 on election night as soon as we can. We're never gonna, you know, sacrifice accuracy for speed. We want to do this quickly, but it depends on how many voters vote at the last minute, Galen. If we see an avalanche of ballots arriving on election day, then yes, that's going to cause a logistical problem for our boards of elections. This is one of the reasons why we've been encouraging Ohioans to put in their absentee ballot request now, and then as soon as those ballots start arriving on October 6th, to return them. And there's good news here. We have announced this week that over a million Ohioans have already requested an absentee ballot. That eclipses anything we've ever seen in state history, and that's a good thing. Over a million Ohioans are going to get their absentee ballot in early October and hopefully return it right away. Again, one of the reasons why we want to get that postage paid from the state legislature, that permission to provide that postage paid envelope, is it speeds up the process. It doesn't benefit a Republican candidate or a Democratic candidate. What it does is it encourages you to vote your ballot and put it in the mail that same day and not leave it sitting on your kitchen table because you're hunting for a postage stamp in the bottom of your junk drawer. So we want to see people return their ballots as soon as they can. If they do, then I think we'll have a result, you know, at a reasonable time on Tuesday night or Wednesday morning. But here's the point, Galen. Those are always the unofficial results. We say that every year. A lot of people don't hear that because, you know, when you hear the result on election night, it's usually going to be, a predictor of what the final tally is going to be. But 3.5 weeks later, when we release the final official tally of the election, that's the one that's really going to matter. And if on election night those results are really thin, then yes, there could be a scenario where one candidate, it looks like they're ahead on election night, and then that number changes. That's not something nefarious happening. That's a manifestation of our commitment that every vote matters. And every vote that's legally cast needs to be counted. And so imagine one of my former teammates who's serving overseas with the United States military. They deserve to have their ballot counted. And as long as it arrives up to 10 days after the election, it will be counted. And so that's where those numbers could change. But here, again, the transparency piece. We have changed around our election night reporting website, the website that reports the results that most members of the media, at least here in Ohio, turn to for their information. And we're going to highlight the number of outstanding absentee ballots. Think about that. You can see X number of votes for this candidate, X number of votes for that candidate, but you will also see the number of how many outstanding absentee ballots there are. So, you know, hey, there's still another 150, 200,000, whatever the number may be, and that'll help people make their predictions.
You mentioned that the result could change as more absentee ballots come in. In 2016, President Trump suggested that, you know, 3 million people voted illegally in California, in part because of that absentee ballot tallying process, that vote by mail tallying process after the fact. So, you know, if either candidate or President Trump, because he's done it before, casts doubt on results that are only finalized after mail ballots come in. What do you see as your responsibility as an elections official to make sure that people actually trust the result?
Share accurate information. That's what I do every day, Galen. That's what I'm doing with you right now. And that'll be what we'll do in that scenario. And by the way, that transparency matters as well. You're going to see right there on election night in Ohio that this is an unofficial tabulation and that there are still hundreds of thousands of outstanding ballots. Those are legitimate ballots that deserve to be counted as long as they're cast legally. And those whatever number of outstanding absentee ballots will be part of the final total. So what you see on election night is never the final answer. It's going to be the case this year that it's not the final answer. And it's important for people to understand that. And again, when the numbers change between election night, that unofficial tally, which is really just a snapshot of where things are so far, and the official result weeks later, that's not something bad happening. That's us carrying out the law of the state of Ohio to make sure that every voice can be heard. As long as they cast their ballot legally, they deserve to have it counted.
Do you think there's any logic behind the idea that the tally should be withheld until they're complete so as not to confuse the public about the state of the race?
Maybe, but I can tell you what the state law says in Ohio, and that's what I have to follow. The state law says in Ohio that we report the unofficial results on election night. That's one time we report results. And then the only other time we can report results is when the final certification of the election happens, when I certify the results that came in from all 88 county boards of elections. So we have to release those two results. It's important that this be an opportunity for a civics lesson. And I've said this to the folks that do television news broadcasts as well. Think about the way you produce your election night show. That idea that you've got the guy over here pointing to the board and zooming in on counties, and then you've got these people over here making prognostications about where things are heading. That model may not work this year, right? That model may not be how we should report election night. It may be a disservice to the people of the United States of America to create this idea that you're going to go to bed on Tuesday, November 3rd, knowing what the result's going to be, because that may not be the case. And so here's an opportunity for us to have a civics lesson. I can tell you in Ohio, we're making sure that people know the facts.
We've been talking a lot about modifications that you have made or preparations that you've made because of the pandemic. But I want to touch on what was originally the big concern for this election cycle, and that's foreign interference. American intelligence officials issued an update in July saying that Russia, China, and Iran are working to interfere in the American democratic process. As Secretary of State, what concerns do you have about foreign interference?
Sure. I mean, my concerns are many. And first of all, it's important for people to understand clearly what's happening here. We have very secure processes as it relates to our voting machines and everything else. The foreign adversaries know that they really can't hack the vote, so instead they're hacking the voters, right? I mean, that's the best way that I can describe it. There's no way for them to effectively change the tallying of votes or change the way that we calculate votes, at least at scale, in any way that would have any kind of impact. And so what they're engaging in is what we would have called propaganda, right, just a few generations ago. The problem is, we all carry propaganda delivery devices around with us today, and we've made it so much easier to micro-target us because of all the information we put out there into the world, all the little breadcrumbs that we leave that tell people what we care about and what makes us tick. And so our foreign adversaries have gotten really good at dividing us on existing fault lines, causing us to distrust one another. And where I come in as Ohio's chief elections officer is when they start trying to discredit elections or cause people to distrust elections. Or the ugliest thing that our foreign adversaries have done is to try to get people to self-disenfranchise. And this is where they've particularly targeted minority communities. And this is why I've built alliances with leaders in Ohio's minority communities. We do disinformation briefings with leaders of Ohio's various minority communities. We have emails on a near weekly basis that we send out to them, updating them on things that we're getting that we can report, obviously, things on the unclassified side that we can share with them. And they report back to us. We have a reporting protocol where when they hear something, they can report it to us so that we can elevate it. We had an example of this just a couple days ago when there was this really ugly phone call that some people people were receiving. And it was very, you know, it was very racist in nature. And it was it's effectively saying, don't vote absentee. You can't trust it. And here's why. And so, you know, these are the kind of things that when we find out about them, we elevate them. Thankfully, that turned out to be an isolated thing. At least it appears to be isolated so far. But we reported it to our federal counterparts for investigation. This is something that we take seriously. Galen, it's like a family, right? We're going to have our fights within the family. Every family does. Republicans versus Democrats, we're going to argue about how things ought to be, higher taxes, lower taxes, pro-life, pro-choice, guns, all this stuff that we want to fight about as Americans is fine. But what we can't do is let somebody outside the family mess with us. Because any good family, when somebody outside tries to mess with them, they come together. And that's why Republicans and Democrats need to be united against this kind of nonsense.
Did you figure out the source of that disinformation phone call?
Yeah, not yet. But also, we're not the investigators, right? We gathered the information and we passed it on to law enforcement. We've worked with members of the congressional delegation here in Ohio that first became aware of this as well. And we're working to run it down. We take any one of those very seriously.
So lastly, you have a big job ahead of you. Is there any way that the state or federal government can help you do your job better at this point? You mentioned that paid postage. You also talked about the online portal for absentee voting. But is there anything else that you need from the state or federal government at this point in time to make sure that you can administer the best election possible?
Yeah, so at this point where we're, you know, again, 24 days before early voting begins in Ohio, what I need from the state government is to respond to the requests that I've made for months now and to offer me the opportunity to provide that postage paid. Again, that decision comes in a few days when the state controlling board casts a vote on Monday morning on my request. As far as the federal government, we've had great support from DHS, from the Federal Elections Assistance Commission. They've been great partners. What we need and want from the federal government is the continued support that we've gotten from DHS. Funding is wonderful, but what we don't want from the federal government is for them to dictate how our states run elections. And this is one of these things where among the elections officials, there's really pretty universal bipartisan agreement. The states run elections. We like that decentralized way of running elections in our country. And as much as we appreciate the federal support in the sense of intelligence and information that we get from DHS and cybersecurity support that we get from CISA, which is a great entity within DHS, and Director Krebs and team there does a great job. We appreciate all of that. We appreciate the work that EAC does, but what we don't want them to do is dictate how we run elections. And Galen, one other thing, as it relates to the disinformation thing, we need to be responsible and not do our foreign adversaries' work for them. And here's what I mean by that. Republicans, Democrats, members of the media, anybody that has an influence on other people, whether it's just something you share on social media or whether you have a larger platform like what you have and what I have, we need to be responsible with how we talk about elections. Because if we tell people elections are broken, they're not going to want to participate. If we tell people that elections are a mess, they're not going to want to be a voter. And that's exactly what our foreign adversaries want to do. We don't want to do Russia's work for them and tell people to distrust our elections. Now, the balance is we've got to call out problems where they exist so that they can be fixed. That's, we have to be very honest and straightforward about that. But if we constantly harp on how messed up things are, people are going to hear that and they're not going to want to be a voter. The fact is that elections are run very well in this country. Every vote matters. Every voice should be heard. And elections do have consequences. And that's why we want to see that record turnout this November. And I believe we will.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time today, Secretary LaRose.
Thanks, Galen.
Frank LaRose is the Secretary of State of Ohio. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the virtual control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcast@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer.
We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.